Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler. I am joined today with the fantastical Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
You know what, Stuart? I'm doing better than you are today.
How
I
are you
was
doing
pretty.
this? I thought we weren't going to talk about it. I'm not. It's too soon.
Too soon? Okay.
It's too soon.
Well, then I will not bring up the fact. No, never mind. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to respectfully, as you were so respectful to me in your text to me, I'm going to not continue that. But I just want you to know that I have had a great week. How about you?
Wow, you enjoy other people's misery? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not all other people.
Okay, just me and our esteemed guest today. Welcome to the show, Will Wright. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Also suffering and feeling very sad. So yeah, don't say anything, Adam. It's
Okay,
too raw.
it's not necessary. I do think it's kind of ironic that you got two Brits on here like a couple of days after the
Who
heartbreak.
knows? Maybe I engineered it that way. I don't know.
Well, we scheduled it before the game, so that's pretty impressive if you did.
I was hopeful we were going to be coming on and talking about looking forward to the final, but yeah,
Yeah, me too.
alas, alas, no.
Oh, that's, yeah. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride, right? It's,
I've
yeah.
seen it too. I've seen it too many times where England are concerned. I
I know.
wear all of the heartbreak of semi-final and final defeats, yeah, on my back catalogue of hurt, of football hurt.
Yeah. I do think it's part of our DNA, though. It's what gives us permission to be sort of curmudgeonly when we want to be, you know. All the
Yeah.
heartbreak, it's fine. It's all
Yeah.
good.
So that's where it
Well,
comes from.
that's part of it for sure. Yeah. And self-deprecating and all the stuff we like to do. But Adam, people didn't come here to listen to us and our melancholy, did they? They came here for maybe the greatest segment in all of entertainment.
What's
You
it
gonna play it?
called? What's it
Oh,
called?
who's news?
I think Will likes it.
Will's pretty stoked though. There's not a lot of movement going on. Oh, he's getting some Saturday Night Fever going on. That's pretty good. Little John Travolta. I like it. Adam, you got Stu's news for us today.
Yeah, so I sent you something the other day, and I think it kind of, in fact, your response, we'll have to go through your response because I kind of got a kick out of it. Which is rare because usually I just roll my eyes at your humor, but this time it was really good. So I opened up Claude the other day, which I do every day at this point, and was getting ready to start several projects. And I got a, in fact, I'm going to open up the screenshot so that the group can see it because I think it's our Desties can see it. I think it's a really interesting thing. So the first thing Claude had when I opened it up was this.
I'm
Think it
glad you didn't
through.
open our entire text thread because that could be kind of messy.
Yeah. I'm smarter than that.
Okay, good. I don't want to get canceled today.
So it said, think it through with Claude for big tasks or small ones, get help throughout your day. And then the first thing that it says is plan a day trip. That's the example that it's using. And it's a waterfront to Twin Peaks, a day in San Francisco. And the fact that they're using planning a trip, and of course this is a day trip, right? Like it's not exactly what we do as destination marketers, but it's a window into where things are going. And where things are going is the AI is going to play a massive part in the trip planning experience. And the interesting thing about Claude being the one to demonstrate this or to put this up as I log in is that Claude historically has not, we've talked about this on our show, has not really been the consumer facing AI tool. It's been a lot more B2B and they've focused a lot more on the business work that happens. Clearly, they still believe that they're going to have a role in the consumer side of things, or they wouldn't be launching products like one that helps you plan a trip in San Francisco, right? And so it's just another sign of what's coming, that AI is going to continue to expand into every portion of our lives and play a factor in the way we make our decisions. And this, what you're seeing right here, in a sense, completely disintermediates the destination website because I'm not getting links to San Francisco's DMO, I'm getting links to, like, the first link that you're seeing here is the ferry building, right? Like, I can go directly to the stakeholder, and the DMO played no part in that conversation. So it's another update from AI that we've talked about that has a really interesting impact on our industry, something we need to be aware of, prepared for. And if Claude's doing it, the consumer apps are most definitely going to continue that route as well.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't finish the text that I sent you afterwards.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I'm not opening that up because people would see the thread. So I sent the screenshot of this to Stuart, and Stuart's response was the Michael Scott GIF where he says, "It's happening," and he's running all throughout the
Oh
office.
my God, it's happening. Yeah, it is. It's sort of that what we've been talking about for a while, but it's a little more real in front of us right now. And this is happening at an interesting time because we know OpenAI ChatGPT has more users, right? But isn't making the revenue because they focused on the consumer first, whereas Claude has fewer users, increasing at a rapid rate, but making a lot more money. At the same time, Claude is doing this push to go to get more consumers. For the average personal use, OpenAI also, ChatGPT just released a massive update this week. Like when I logged in, I think yesterday or the day before, it actually made me reinstall, relog in. And the first thing it said was, hey, we've now got functionality that we can work on your desktop. And we see that you've had Claude on your lap, on your computer. We can actually import all the folders that you've been working on in Claude, and you can take start off here doing all the stuff you've been doing in Claude. So all this awesome functionality we've been talking about is now a lot of it is available in ChatGPT. So they're really trying to cannibalize each other from both sides, which is interesting. But I think the net impact of this is sort of another big leap forward for AI being able to replace the current role as we've seen it of a DMO. And so I think what we've got to do now is figure out what is the new role in the new world order. We talked about this a little bit in the last episode. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it because we've sort of pontificated a little bit about we can't just assume that we are the trusted authority. We can't just assume that LLMs are going to see us as the authoritative content creator for our space. So there's some things we're going to have to do deliberately over the next months, not years, if we want to stay relevant. And so we'll talk about that a little bit more today too in the topic. But Will, do you have anything to add for this Stu's news?
I've got a question actually. Was that the same for everyone, or did that specifically pick up? Because clearly you're looking at a lot of tourism related content, a lot of travel related content. I'd like to know if that was different for other users who were using Claude for perhaps other purposes. If it put, recipes was another one that was on that screenshot, wasn't it? Did people do a lot in food, but was recipes the first thing that was put to them? So how personalized was that? I'd be really interested to know that. I don't know if you know the answer.
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually, you and Stuart are the first people I've really talked to this about or talked about this to. And so I'd be really interested. In fact, Destes, did you see this window when you opened up your Claude, or was this so customized that it was unique to me because of the work I'm doing in destination marketing? I think that'd be a really interesting question to answer.
I didn't get it. So I don't know if it's not been rolled out in the UK. Yeah, but I didn't see that.
Was it on the Claude desktop app, Adam, that you saw it?
Yes, it was the desktop app. It was the opening window in the desktop app.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I will say this. When Gemini did some updates probably 6 months ago, and they sent emails to Gmail users or to the account holders for Gemini, the first use case it cited was travel. I think travel's a low-hanging fruit for a lot of these folks because they know it's something that most people are gonna have familiarity with. It's something that happens frequently for a lot of people, and so I think it's also one where there's a lot of revenue at stake. So it makes sense that my gut says it wasn't customized. I think it probably was the default because those seem both very generic and common, right? Recipes and travel. But yeah, be interesting to see.
Do you use it for recipes as well, Adam?
And that's the thing. I don't do anything with recipes in AI. I've never used it for recipes. So that's what makes me wonder if everybody got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, or at least the cool kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
How much of this do you think is a play for commercialization? You know, them actually thinking they can sell those slots. You know, that would be even more troubling for the DMO, wouldn't it? If they were thinking that, you know, this play on tourism was, you know, them essentially moving into the DMO space of commercial promotion.
Yeah, I mean, inevitably it's going to have to be. I think most of the, although Anthropic specifically have said they don't going to put ads on, right, for the time being. But I think the other AIs are always looking at where are the biggest dollars being spent in advertising online. Travel's a massive category. They know they've got multiple players in that ecosystem, from OTAs to individual hotels, restaurants, attractions, and DMOs that are all spending money to try to get a piece of the attention. So, yeah, I think if you look historically at Facebook, at Google, other places that have ads, travel's typically one of the first categories that they'll dig into because they know they can make money. Interesting. Fascinating times. We've got to be ready for it. And today we're going to talk about a topic that hopefully will leave you a little bit more prepared for what's coming. So, Will, you spent a number of years building websites for travel entities, and you've sort of got a newer philosophy on where the website's going. So, do you have a thesis, or how do you want to set this conversation up today?
Yeah, okay. I've worked on a positioning statement, so I'll read you my positioning statement. It ties in quite nicely with yes, some of your subjects that you were talking about last week, actually.
Yeah,
So
I'm just going to say we're a little indignant about the fact that you prepared for this show. That's sort of one of the unwritten rules that you're not really supposed to prepare anything before the show, because then you might make Adam look bad and he gets really sad, you know?
Oh, yeah,
So.
that's it. It's also Stu's news is always decided about 3 minutes before we press record. So yeah, this is a massive level of preparation that you've brought to the table
Well,
here.
I can testify to the fact that Stu's news is decided 3 minutes before recording it because
Why are you guys
I've seen
demystifying this thing? Like,
that happen.
that's part of
Yeah,
the magic
sorry.
of this show.
No, it's sorry. Hold on, Will, before you go, I do want to clarify. Stuart spends hours scouring the web and searching for the perfect story to represent Stu's news, and I don't want anyone else believing anything different.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're setting the record straight.
Yeah, I won't be invited on again, will I? If I keep showing these little behind the curtain
I
reveals.
mean, the worst part is Adam doesn't put on a shirt until right before we record. That's the thing that people really want
Sometimes
to hear.
after.
So.
I'm glad I wasn't invited onto any of those records. Okay, so here's my positioning statement. DMOs are sitting on one of the most powerful editorial assets in travel. Trusted, local, authentic knowledge of a place. Yet, I think a lot of them are wasting that unique opportunity to really become the trusted local concierge. They're still treating themselves or acting like listing style, paid for listings rather than genuine local experts.
Yep. I mean, very similar to what we talked about in the last episode. So, folks, if you haven't listened to it, it's probably good pre-listening before this one. But yeah, I have no notes on that. I agree. End of
Oh,
the episode. It was great.
I thought we were meant to disagree. I was hoping that someone was going to disagree with me.
Well, I think we'll probably disagree in terms of the solution, right? I think that's probably where we're
Yeah,
getting into it.
the problem I think is it leaves very little room for debate. I think there's a million different ways to go on the solution. I've been struggling over the last month or so. I've gone all the way to destination websites will be completely irrelevant and non-existent, and I've gone all the way to the most important thing that a destination can work on right now is its website, and everywhere in between. And so I'm struggling with this one big time.
I
Well,
think both of those statements are true. I think the current destination website will be completely obsolete in at some time in the future, and probably quicker than we think. But I think the concept of a depository of content that we curate and disseminate is maybe the most important thing we're going to be doing.
yeah, I agree with that because I think to put things another way is that I think DMOs or destinations, whatever form they take. I know in the US it's mainly DMOs, but in the UK there's sort of different forms of destination. But I think they're really in the knowledge business. Now that's the difference. And I think there's a shift of mindset that needs to happen where DMOs need to say, we are in the knowledge business. That's what we're about. That's the value that we're providing. And it's not about we're a membership organization that offers you a listing on a website and some nice other, stuff that goes around it. It's we're this genuine knowledge for the area that no one else can compete with. And all the other places that people might look for travel inspiration online, they can't do what a DMO and what a destination does in terms of knowledge because they're much more generalists. They might have more traffic, they might have more authority, but when it comes to knowledge, that's the place where every DMO can really win on their website.
Yeah, I don't know if knowledge is the right word, and so because I think there's different types of information that LLMs need, and some of which they already have and will continue to have, right? So things like facts about a property, like the immutable facts, or even mutable facts that don't often change, things like how many units a hotel has, or what opening times it is, or even the amenities that a hotel has, stuff like that. What's great on a menu at a restaurant that might change a little bit over time, but I think that kind of information is not the DMO's role necessarily. I think OTAs, the businesses themselves, are going to be able to provide that information. So to me, where the knowledge gap is, and it might be the difference between knowledge and wisdom a little bit, to steal a quote from Star Wars, but what do people do with this information? And it's about experiences, right? It's about what can I expect when I go here, and why is this something that solves my problem or answers my question or educates me on why I should or shouldn't do something? I think that's the space where we need to operate that we haven't been operating, because to your point, we have been glorified listings pages. If you go back to last episode, we talked a lot about the fact that we shouldn't be trusted because we're not providing truly authentic content, because it's biased, it's Pollyanna-ish, it's superficially identifying differences without actually looking at the pros and the cons, the weighted arguments about things. So I think increasingly we've got to become the collector, curator, and disseminator of real experiences, honest brokers of the truth, which I don't think we're honest brokers of the truth right now, to be fair.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at it because the all of this, that being in the knowledge business, being in the wisdom business, whatever you want to call it, that all of that depends on quality of data, doesn't it? So, and you've got, I think you've got quality of data in several different layers. You've got the stuff that you've just mentioned, how many rooms are available in this accommodation, what are the opening times, what's on the menu. That's your hygiene level of data. But then there's a layer of data on top of that to give that genuine authoritativeness on, to be that local concierge. You like these things. I know you like these things, and these are the things that I'm able to recommend to do that in a digital concierge kind of way, digital concierge. There's a layer of data that needs to sit above all of that, which is I'm going to tell you what my, for want of a better term, what my vibe is. So I like places that are really buzzy and lively when I go and eat. That is not traditional data or information that exists. So somebody's got to be collecting that data and saying this is a place that's good for somebody who wants a really lively, entertaining, night out. Maybe there's local singers on, when you're dining, because some people that's not going to appeal to. And that's the layer of information and data that I don't think exists at the moment where the destinations can win because they will have experienced a lot of these places. They will know what the vibe is and they'll be able to give it that sort of quality scoring in certain metrics where an OTA, or other kind of listing site won't be able to do that because they're not there experiencing it day to day.
Yeah, I think where I'd push back a little bit is I think, if we were having this conversation 2 or 3 years ago, we'd be thinking about how do we collect and organize this data in a very linear fashion, right? We'd say, okay, almost like let's define the attributes, right? Vibe might be an attribute, and there might be a spectrum of attributes, a 5-point scale from real vibey to low vibey, right? And we'd have to go and manually collect these specific data points for every attribute that we can think of. And we think about it in a real linear way. But now, because AI can parse copious volumes of unorganized information into tangible results like that, you can look at things like reviews as an example, right? So TripAdvisor obviously has the inside track when it comes to reviews. They've got more volume than anyone else. And so over the last 10 years, they've collected anecdotes in written form from tens of thousands of people for every hotel. And so they can use AI now, natural language processing, to say, hey, give me sort of a summary of, in general, of the good and the bad and the vibe and the whatever of this property. So now it doesn't become so linear in the data collection organization because it can be more conversational with the user, right? So the user could say, hey, I'm looking for something with a little more buzz. And AI can go and look through reviews and say, okay, this listening to these people, the signals are suggesting that this is a more active property. And so we don't necessarily have to curate the data like we used to. We just need to collect a lot of it and then create a tool like the middleware or the processor between the request and the answer, right? That's or the request and the data that produces the answer. And so I think the good news is we can sort of take a page out of the LLMs and we can start to, whether this is ethical or not, I don't know. I'm sort of thinking out loud, but we can scrape information that's publicly available. We can build these sort of robust profiles on the properties. We can supplement that with our own first-party proprietary information. We then just have to create the tool that gives the consumer the keys to access it. If that makes sense.
I kind of want to jump in on this because I've talked a lot over the last couple of years on this show about the fact that that's true. At least 30% of the time on the show, right? So I've talked about that we're in the attention economy, and our job as DMOs is to convert attention into trust. I've talked a lot about that. So assuming that that's correct, just for the sake of the rest of where I'm headed with this, you and I talked a lot last week, Stuart, about the fact that we are not converting that attention into trust as well as we could be because we're not giving actual truth in results because we're sacrificing truth for fairness, right? Is that a fair?
Yeah, equity probably more
Okay.
than fairness.
Yeah. That's yeah. So true. We're sacrificing truth for equity, and there's a variety of reasons for that. We've got the stakeholders, we've got members of the organization, all that kind of stuff. But then you start looking at, okay, well, why are the TripAdvisors and other travel search engines winning? Well, it's because they're using customer experience, actual customer experience, which is the reviews, to populate the results that are going to provide the best experience for the user. So if we continue down this path of sacrificing truth for equity, what we're doing is guaranteeing that these alternative resources like TripAdvisor, like the other resources that are providing results, and now AI, because AI is going to do the same thing, how are we going to be able to convert attention into trust at a higher rate than somebody that's providing the true results and experiences that people are having? If we want to talk about an existential crisis, the existential crisis is if we are sacrificing truth for equity and none of our competitors, including now the AI platforms, are, how are we expected to win? How are we going to have trust with our consumers? And then how are our stakeholders going to benefit if that delta continues to grow?
Interesting because one of the notes that I'd made as I was preparing was to
Darn it,
say,
Will.
yeah, and it's quite interesting because I thought this is where this conversation may lead, but I actually was wondering to myself about whether DMOs could become an accreditation layer. So, and that I think could be quite an interesting sort of area where, again, the DMO could really win. It's that, yes, you've got all those reviews, and of course, real customer data, real customer feedback is going to be the thing that everyone looks at. That's what we all do when we're planning a trip or going to a restaurant, whatever. We want to see what other people think. Does that match what my expectations and my needs are? But if you lay layered over the top of that, a sort of, yeah, approved by almost like a local expert has seen those reviews and they've confirmed they're true. There's another layer that sits over the top of that. And again, I think that's something that only a DMO would be able to do, or somebody from the area would be able to do. And it's almost like, a sort of becomes an even more trusted source of they've checked that out and they've confirmed, they've been able to take out the outliers. That review that I saw there, that I know that's not reflective of that destination. So, we can forget about that one. That might have just been a one-off. But these reviews, these are ones that I recognize are true to this particular venue or destination. And I wonder if that might be a sort of future direction for DMOs.
Yeah, we talked about accreditation from a couple of different perspectives. From a local authority perspective, people don't know what a DMO is in general, right? We think with this really cool, really important piece of the ecosystem, which we are, but 99% of people don't even know DMOs exist, nor do they care, right? And so there's no inherent authority in what we do to the average consumer, and so. When you look at something like TripAdvisor, it didn't earn its authority for several years until it hit critical mass and had the brand recognition and the track record of building relationships with individuals. And then when it really took off was when it connected to Facebook and individuals became sort of unwittingly the sort of conduit to introduce TripAdvisor to their friends. And that's when it really took off. So for an individual DMO, to stand out in the crowd to the consumers is almost impossible. But I do think for folks like Google, who we're talking to, folks like OpenAI, folks like any of the AI folks, they're looking for shortcuts to get a lot of information. And I do think we could play that role where we're a broker of information to the LLMs, but we got to figure out the structure of that, what that means. Ultimately, what we're going to have to do is have an honest conversation, going back to last week's episode, with our stakeholders and say, listen, we exist to serve our members in our community and to drive the economy. That's why we exist. But our marketing and our content that we're collecting and the authoritativeness that we're trying to build, 100% of that has to serve the consumer. And sometimes those two things are in opposition to each other. Sometimes we're going to do things that you as an individual business are not going to like, but it's not our voice giving you a thumbs down, right? It's that someone had a bad experience. And we need to be honest brokers of that. Now, if we're really being utopian about it, our members would say, thank you for the critical feedback, right? We're going to update our processes and procedures to improve the guest experience, and then everyone wins. But we know in reality, egos and power structures and all this other stuff in the transaction that we have, if they're paying us, are going to dictate that our members are going to say, hey, take that down. I won't support you. I won't be a part of you unless you take that down. Therein is the chasm that we're going to face that we got to figure out how to cross. How do we square that circle?
So I don't know. I haven't only visited the US twice in my life. I don't know if this is a thing that exists in the US, but certainly in the UK, we've always had visitor information centres. So run by the official tourist board that people can pop into when they're in a destination and ask for advice. And they're seen as quite authoritative, but they are massively on the decline. So almost every week, another visitor information center is closed down because people are obviously getting their information online. And I suppose where I was thinking about that accreditation layer, there's a huge a gap, I think, with visitor information centers no longer existing, somewhere where you can pop into and say, I'm here for the day, and look, it's raining. I wasn't expecting it to be raining. What can I do with my family now I'm here? That no longer exists, but there's a space for that because people still need that information. They still need that local expertise. And I suppose that's what I'm theorizing is and you're right that no one knows who the DMO are, but everyone knows has got a feeling towards a visit website. So visit Myrtle Beach or visit Peak District in Derbyshire here in the UK. And I think they do trust them. They don't know that they're a DMO, but they know that they're more official than some other website where they might get information about that destination. And I suppose that's what I'm thinking. Could they take that space of the visitor information center, but more of an online visitor information center where you can get that tick of approval and you go in and ask someone, I'm after this kind of thing, and they can go, this is the place that you should go.
Let me ask a question here, because I might be able to bridge what you're saying, Will, and then Stuart. I want to connect it to, I mean, you're in a DMO, so I want to know how viable this is, right? But Will, you're suggesting some level of accreditation or an accreditation program. I think the challenge that you could run into is that's from a bandwidth perspective, it's going to be a lot of work for the DMO for somebody to run the accreditation program. But I think the principle of it makes a lot of sense. And so what I'm wondering is, should every DMO have review data from all the disparate platforms? Because TripAdvisor will never surface Facebook reviews, right? So could the DMO, as part of its role, allow the consumer to see what the review score is and give access to reviews on all these disparate websites, so that the consumer actually can build trust with the DMO? Because now I'm providing a value that TripAdvisor can't provide. I'm showing what the reviews are across the board for each of the individual businesses within the destination. So they're not going through like this accreditation process that's a massive amount of work. Instead, we're surfacing truth. Unbiased truth, by the way, and our stakeholders, if they complain, it's like, well, get your reviews up. We've got to show the truth to these consumers.
That's the problem, though. In theory, right? Utopian society, ego and other things aside, that's the answer, right? If you get bad reviews, do better, right? That's the answer. But there's no business in the world that is going to take that kind of a line of conversation from someone they're paying money to. And I've seen this firsthand. I used to, before I was at the DMO, we ran a private website called myrtlebeach.com. It was, similar to a DMO website. A lot of people actually thought we were the legal, tourism bureau. But we added reviews to that site and we lost advertisers. That people said, if you have reviews, we're not going to be on this site. And they were the bad actors, right? And so we made a business decision at the time and said, well, really, we don't want these properties on our website because they're not going to provide a great experience for the consumer. And so I almost wonder if at some point does a DMO have to have standards for membership or for promotion beyond the transaction? Do we have to print out an expectation? Hey, your TripAdvisor reviews have to be above 3.5 for you to be a member of this organization, or things like that. I don't think we can do what you're saying, Adam. I don't think we can just go grab reviews from Expedia and TripAdvisor legally, that they have terms of service that prevent that. You can get for free the last five most recent reviews from TripAdvisor. I don't know that you can from Expedia, but what we could do is, without folks realizing, this is, again, you got an ethical quandary here. I'm not saying you should do this, but you could go scrape all of them and just form a knowledge graph of each property and then allow the consumer to ask personal, like deliberate questions about it and not actually show reviews. People don't really want reviews. They want to make sure they're making a good decision that's a fit for them, right? And they'd much rather do that as efficiently as possible versus having to read through 50 reviews. Because what do we do when we look at like Amazon reviews or any reviews? We'll look at the average score, and then depending on our personality, we'll leave a look at the one stars or the five stars, right? And we'll usually have confirmation bias to push us in a direction. And so we're really just trying to make sure we're not making a bad decision. And so if we can do that in a more efficient way, I think the website of the future is going to be a lot more dynamic in the content that's created. I think a lot of the content will be created in real time based on what's happening from the inputs of the consumer. I don't think it's going to be a bunch of static content anymore.
Have you, in all the time you've worked at Myrtle Beach, have you ever known somebody to turn up and say, I want to be a member, and you to turn them down because they didn't meet certain quality criteria?
We have turned members down. Yeah.
On that basis, that they didn't fit with,
There
the
have
morals or.
been members that have gone through rehabilitation to maintain membership because of complaints that we've received. Yeah. So, but I mean, it has to be egregious, right? It has to be absolutely egregious because every business is going to have someone complaining about something, right? And so
Yeah.
we can't be an arbitrator. We're not a business, better business bureau, right? We are in this case, but most are not a chamber of commerce. So we're not here to be an arbitrator between the consumer and the business necessarily. Maybe we have to be in the future. I don't know, but that's not the current paradigm.
When I think, yeah, I know you mentioned experience, expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness on the last episode, but when you think about that as a framework, I don't think there's any other organization that could, tick all of those boxes as well as a DMO. And, yes, you do all of those things, and that's why you become the trusted source. And I think the idea of becoming an accreditation layer and having to meet certain criteria, that it would switch the role of the DMO. You'd be less cap in hand to the businesses to say, we're desperate for you to become members and pay to be listed on our site and get all the other benefits you get through membership, and actually turn it on its head and say, you're coming to us because we are seen as local experts and we have the authoritativeness, and you're going to get exposure. But it's a completely different spin on what makes a DMO worth having membership with.
Yeah, and maybe it's a tiered system of some kind. Maybe there's like a entry level that everyone can access, because we talked on this and we sort of expanded on it a little more in the last episode. But I talk a lot about we should be paid by members for what we do for the community to raise all votes versus what an individual business gets directly from us, right? And so maybe it's, hey, you're a member so that you can help support our initiative to promote the destination. But in this case, when we're talking about how do we help the business get found when someone's lower in the funnel, maybe that's a different tier that does require some kind of approval process, accreditation, minimum requirements, something like that.
I think that comes back to my original argument about, DMOs are wasting this opportunity about being seen as the local experts, because everybody likes the idea of a hidden gem, something that no one else has discovered. And I might come to a destination for the big tourist attraction they have, the major attraction, and that's why I'm planning my whole trip around that. But I'm going to spend 2 or 3 days in that destination, and then I get to a point where I've done the big tourist thing. I've maybe done a couple of other things that I knew were really good, and I read good reviews about online. But now I want to do something which feels completely authoritative and unique to that destination. And I want it to be a hidden gem. Well, the people who work in the DMOs, like the people who work in the visitor information centers, like I was just explaining, they're the people who can go, oh, here's this thing. No one knows about this apart from the locals. You go and do that. And that's actually how you provide value to all members, because you're saying, what are the things that you're most interested in? I'm going to give you this little recommendation. You're going to feel like it's completely unique to you, and you're almost the only person who's ever visited from outside the area that's going to be able to go and do this thing and live like a local. And I think that comes back to my original argument.
Yeah. And I think there's sort of, we got to also think of not just the website, right? Because we talked a lot about, okay, people are going to an LLM and actually proactively looking for building a trip to Myrtle Beach. But I think increasingly what we're seeing is the inspiration of travel is happening on social, right? Like the people aren't going to ChatGPT and saying, what should I do today? And it says, go on a trip. The thought of I want to go on a trip is coming through inspiration that's happening outside of the LLMs, usually on social media and usually in the form of video these days. And so I think the other piece to this that we're going to have to get a lot better at is inspiring travel through individual experiences as well. Like, that what we've done at Myrtle Beach is create a content army, but let's say it's a dozen people or more, but we're still sort of acting in the way that DMOs have, where we're saying, okay, assign you go write the top 10 taco places in Myrtle Beach, and you go write this. And I think increasingly, I'm considering we may need to approach that fundamentally different and almost incentivize individuals to become content creators in their own right off of our platform, where we're not controlling it. For how do we create 100 or 200 or 1,000 individual micro influencers in our community, maybe locals that are just going out and experiencing things and documenting it. Like, I think that's where we're going to have to get better, is how do we get a lot more content created within certain guardrails about all the businesses in our community. I think it's easier for restaurants. I think it's easier for attractions. It's going to be harder for hotels because we don't really have control over who's staying in the hotels, but we could incentivize people to go to a restaurant or go to an attraction and just document it.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I think that that's where the switch actually happens, is that every DMO website, every visit somewhere website, they're the bit where they really operate is pre-visit, isn't it? You know, that's when people are thinking about, I want to get the inspiration, I want to know where to go, what the best things to do are. But I think what needs to happen, and the rise of AI will definitely facilitate this, is they need to become a tool which is suddenly all your pre-visit and your during visit and your
Your
post visit as
posts.
well, because that's a massive change for every DMO website, because pretty much all the ones that you know that I've ever seen, and I think we do pretty good websites in our organization, and I think we move more towards that. You we can get you in destination usage as well, but most do not do that, and that's a huge failing because you're not able to build that advocacy and that loyalty and genuine trust.
Yeah, this is fascinating. We're getting a little low on time. So, are there any sort of big recommendations that you have, Will, for DMOs that are listening to this? I mean, we've been sort of pontificating a little bit, but what's the takeaway? What should DMOs be doing today or doing tomorrow that they didn't do today from this
Yeah,
conversation?
quality of data. And I don't just mean make sure your opening times are correct. I mean add that layer of qualitative and quantitative data into every listing, business profiles, but event listings, festival listings, itineraries, trails. Add that layer of extra data over the top of it. I think it's quality of data so that people can ask extremely personalized questions. What's the best vibe for, that matches my vibe, and get extremely personalized answers. And it all comes down to the quality of the data and spending more time, making sure that you've got as much information and data as you can about all of your things to do that exist.
Yeah. Adam, you've been quiet for a little bit, my friend.
I know,
Are
I'm
you
struck.
ruminating?
Yeah, I am. Well, so there's a couple of things that I'm thinking about. Number one, Will, I think you're right in a sense when you talk about the importance for the future of a DMO is to be that source of knowledge, right? But my problem with that is, you can know all you want. If nobody knows that you know it, it doesn't matter, right? And so it's the exportation of that knowledge, which I don't know if exportation is a word, but the export of that knowledge is almost more valuable than the knowledge itself, and which is why we talk about there's the marketing arm and there's the website, which can be that source of knowledge, but I just don't know, as we talk about like the role of a DMO, I just don't know that having the knowledge alone is enough, right? And so the combination of the export of the knowledge and then the trust that can be developed through the knowledge, to me that's kind of the sweet spot. And then when you talk about the destination website, does a great job before the visit, very little during the visit, and very little after the visit. I mean, that's one of the things that has always kind of gotten under my skin in the destination marketing industry as a whole, is I think we spend millions of dollars to get people to book their trip. And then once they book their trip, we're not helpful at all in a lot of situations. And so I'd be really interested to see how the destination website could evolve to be more useful while a visitor is in destination and also after they visit a destination. So I don't know. This specific topic of the future of a destination website, I go back and forth on. Like, there is a part of my brain that thinks the destination website will be completely obsolete. And there is a part of my brain that thinks it's the most important thing, like I said at the beginning. And I'm struggling to find, like, if you gun to my head, Adam, what's your opinion on this? I don't know. Like, I don't, I'm like my kid trying to choose a treat at the grocery store right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't figure out which thing to grab. And so it's causing, a lot of thought, a lot of ruminating, and I'm not sure I have the answer at the moment. Well,
The golden thread for every DMO that I've ever known is how do we collect first party data when we're not the merchant of record, when the booking doesn't happen with us? So that's the challenge that's got to be solved in order to become, we know someone's coming to the destination on this date and we can provide them with useful information, and then we know they've been, and then we can build that advocacy and build that loyalty and get them to come back and repeat visits. And that's the bit that's going to unlock being able to bring that true life cycle to life. And that's a bit that every DMO I've ever worked with is really struggling with, because the booking and the transaction doesn't happen, so they can't collect the first party data.
So I'm at real risk because we don't have much time to open this can of worms, but I think it's important. Maybe we'll do a second episode on this. I think we've been doing it for the wrong reasons.
Like The Bachelor.
I don't know what that means, but no. I know we have, right? So we've been on this kick since I've been here. First party data, first party data, first party data, because we want to build these really robust profiles of a user, and over time we can retarget them, and we can personalize their journey and do all this stuff. Melissa on our team, she's our analytics guru here. She's been on the show before. She pointed out to me recently, we were having a conversation, and she and I both came from the hotel side of things and hotel websites. Like, the conversion rate on a hotel website at best is 1 or 2%. Like a traditional hotel website at best. So 98% of the people that come to your website do not transact, right? And the repeat visitation on a hotel website is really low, sub 10% at best, even if you're doing a good job with CRM, right? When I come to the DMO, it's, and she pointed this out to me, some caveats to this, but if you look at organic traffic, it's certainly south of 5% of our traffic. It's probably south of 2% for most DMOs of our traffic is repeat visitation. So typically, we're getting one swipe at a consumer. 98% of the folks that come to our site, it's the only swipe we're getting. Maybe they're on a different device. Let's say it's double. Let's say there's 4%. 96% of folks that are coming to our site, we're going to only see them one time. And chances of getting any kind of PII are close to maybe 5% at that, right? So I think we've been trying to collect the wrong kind of data for the wrong kind of reasons. I think we've tried to collect it for that person to target them. What we should have been doing is collecting as much as we can, extracting value from that consumer to help everyone else. So the type of information we collect shouldn't be PII, it should be their personal experiences. I think that's the switch that's happened in my head.
And then use that to target more of that type of
And
person.
you use that as now better gravity to attract more people, to be more influential with the LLMs, to provide a better experience for the next guy. So I think we've been doing it wrong.
Well,
I
and the knowledge
couldn't
that you
agree with that
get.
more. Sorry, Adam.
Well,
I couldn't agree with
no.
that more. And we're meant to disagree, but that's a really good summary of what I think.
But the knowledge that you get from the customers is actually now beneficial to the stakeholders that you support if you're looking at the data from that perspective.
And maybe we become sort of a coach to our stakeholders too. So, hey, we're going to ask questions about your business to these consumers. And when we glean insights and information, we're going to share that back with you. Hey, maybe people are complaining about the wait times at the lobby. Maybe people are complaining about not enough parking spaces. That's value that we're now providing to our stakeholders that we couldn't do before. So, told you it's a can of worms. It's maybe a whole nother episode, but hopefully we've made people think a little bit today. That's the goal of the show. Apparently, it's not to provide answers because Adam doesn't have any.
Not today.
Not today.
Not today.
Well, I appreciate bringing this topic, my friend. It's always good to chat with a fellow Brit and
Yeah, my pleasure.
outnumber Adam. You know, a lot of our listeners are not going to know which one of us was talking because we all sound the same to them.
Yeah, hopefully they have their video on.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Well, Will, if they want to find you, learn more about what you're up to, where can they do that?
Yeah, on LinkedIn, Will at Destination Core, if you search that on LinkedIn, or it can be Will at destinationdoor.com if they want to email
Destination
me.
Door?
Destination Door. It's a new brand we're opening. Destinationcore.com.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, man. Destination Door. Someone should go register that now. Be amazing. And I like
Be
the pun
like,
of their opening. Yeah, we're
yeah.
opening it.
Be like The
It's
Lion, the
good.
Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't know if that's a book that you guys are aware of, Stuart. You'll certainly know of it. Yeah. You
Of
open your
course.
door straight into the destination. No longer need to get on a plane.
That's awesome. That would be a great invention. Go let us know when you've cracked that. We'll have you back on the show. Adam, they want to find you.
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, or of course, you can find me on Tourism IQ.
Awesome. You can find me at stuart.butler@visitmodelbeach.com. And then you can come find me in Model Beach if you ever want to take a trip. It's a great destination, family friendly, lots to do. And I'm going to win you over one
Yeah.
destiny at a time. Come visit Model Beach.
And Stuart is going to collect your first party data for the right reasons.
That's correct. Yep, 100%. Well, thank you for listening. Please leave a review, subscribe. We love hearing from our desties, especially Adam, because his ego is a little brittle. He needs affirmation. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. Well, that person's not here for the right reasons.